Good morning. Everything is hunky-dory. That's what my mom used to say from time to time when I was a boy. How many of you ever heard that funny little phrase? How many of you have said that funny little phrase? Okay, great. Well, my mom used to say that maybe when the five of us were together getting ready to eat a nice meal on the back porch. Everything's hunky-dory. Or maybe when the groceries are in and the house is picked up and the laundry's folded, maybe she'd just say, everything is hunky-dory. I would love to be able to say that for each of you. I would love for each of you to be able to say that for your own lives, that everything today is just fine. I'd be so happy if you looked at every corner of your life and you said, you know, everything is hunky-dory. But I know for a fact that that's not the case. We've got a long list of prayer requests in our bulletin. I know that many of you, or some of you here, are going through some very deep waters as I speak. I think it's safe to say that all of us carry a heartache or two. We've got pressures or problems that are weighing us down. In our summer preaching series on the promise of God, I believe that the promise we're going to look at this morning will help lighten that load. It's my hope that each one of us will carry out of this room less of a burden than we carried in. Now, in order to do this, I needed to do a little writing. You might have seen a card with a pen on it on your chair. If you don't see it, you're probably sitting on it. This is just for your eyes only. Nobody's going to see this. Okay, I'd like you to write on that card one heartache, one burden, one worry in your life. Not a paragraph, not a sentence, just maybe a word to distill what's going on. Kids, you can do this too. Now, if by the grace of God, you look over your life and you don't have any worries, any burdens, then just write hunky-dory. So everybody take out your card, take a minute, and write a word or two. When you've got that done, just fold it up and kind of hold on to it through the sermon. You got it? Okay. Now, if I were to gather those cards, which I'm not going to do, and if we were to stack them up and I were to read them one by one, I think we'd be moved to tears. We would read, I'm lonely. I'm discouraged. I'm sick. I miss my family. I'm frustrated at work. I'm grieving. We would read, my schedule is overwhelming. I lost my job. My kids have strayed from the Lord. My faith is wavering. We're in debt. I'm struggling with sin. I can't keep going any longer. And on the list would read. In light of all that heartache, a question bubbles to the surface. Where is God in all of that? What role does God play when you and I face troubles? Or let me put it this way. What should we expect from God when everything is not hunky-dory? What should we expect from God when we look around in our lives and everything is not exactly fine? Now, that question has been chewed on and answered down through history, and it's been answered in many lousy ways. Some people say we should expect nothing from God. Expect nothing from God. I have listened to a radio personality. I respect the guy in many ways, but he said, I expect very little from God. In effect, he was saying, God gave us the roadmap and said, I'll see you at the finish line. You're on your own. That is clearly a lousy answer to our question. That's expecting way too little from God. Now, here's another lousy answer to our question. Some people say we should expect God to remove all the problems entirely. They'll say that the troubles in our lives are a result of personal sin. And if we clean up our act, God will remove the problems. I had a friend in Pennsylvania who suffered from devastating back pain. And another believer would routinely come to his house and say, you need to own up to your sin, and then God will hear you. That's just not true. Godly people suffer in every conceivable way this side of heaven. Jesus himself suffered. We can't expect a life without pain. The Bible never promises that. To expect a life free from heartache is to expect too much from God. And here's one more unreasonable expectation. Some people say, I expect God to tell me why. Why am I facing this problem? If God would tell me why, then I can accept it. I talked with a lady, tears pouring down her face. She had just lost her beloved husband. She said, why? Why? Why would God allow my husband to die? She was on her way to talk to her pastor to get the answer to that question. Well, while it is true that there is a purpose behind our suffering, we will likely never know it this side of heaven. Job, you remember, demanded an answer of God. Tell me why. God said, not going to give it to you. Now, those are just a few unreasonable expectations. We should not expect God just to sit there and wait for us at the finish line. We should not expect God to remove our problems entirely. We should not expect God to tell us why. So, if we should not expect those things, what then should we expect from Him? What should we expect from God with the heartaches that you've just written on that little white card? What should we expect from God when our lives are not hunky-dory? We're not the first people to ask that question. God's people have asked that question in many forms down through the millennia. And Psalm 46 is written to answer that question for us. And I think you're going to like the answer. I'd like us to read this whole psalm out loud together. It's not that long. And as we do, I want you to be looking for two verses. There are two identical verses that kind of give us the broad brush answer to our question. What should you and I expect from God when we find ourselves in trouble? So we're going to read out loud. You can follow it on the screen. I think. There it is. Great. Psalm 46. Reading together, we'll try to keep up the pace, okay? God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. Though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in an uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see the works of the Lord in the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. What can we expect of God when we're in trouble? Did you see it? Verse 7, the Lord Almighty is with us. Verse 11, the same verse, the Lord Almighty is with us. We can expect the presence of God. We can expect God to be by our side in our hour of need. We can expect God to be with us. Now, that promise of the presence of God can be best understood if we think of it like a pyramid. A pyramid is built broad at the bottom, and then each layer kind of builds all the way to the top. The base of our pyramid today is that foundational promise that the Lord Almighty is with us. As we move up that pyramid, we will see how His presence affects us, how it impacts our lives. So first we'll start at the base and nail down that promise. Then we'll move up the pyramid and see the implications of that promise for our lives. So let's take a closer look at the promise of God's presence. The verse reads, the Lord Almighty is with us. That's the base of the pyramid. Let's unpack that little phrase a bit. This is no small promise. There is nothing like a good companion, a friend, a sibling, a spouse. But the very best human companions don't compare to God. Friends can't always be there for us. Friends have limited resources. Friends will at times let us down. Just this week, I had to tell a dear friend, I can't help you. I don't have the capacity. But God's not like that. God never tires. God never sleeps. God never lets us down. God never runs out of resources. Listen to a description of his resources. He is called the Lord Almighty. Almighty. That means he's the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies. Heavenly armies, earthly armies are all at his disposal. In verses 8 and 9, we see a description of the power of the Lord Almighty. He says, come and see the works of the Lord, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow, shatters the spear, burns the shields with fire. Judgment day is coming, and our powerful God will come down in wrath to end the evils of this world. He'll put an end to war. He'll establish peace on earth. And then verse 10 takes it even further. He says, I will be exalted among the nations. The whole world will one day worship him. And how does he accomplish all of that? Verse 6 says, he lifts his voice. With his voice, he does all that. Isn't it mind-boggling to realize that this God who can do all that, this God, the supreme ruler of the world, chooses to walk with little old you and little old me. God, with all his power and resources, promises to stand by your side when you're in trouble. We must never take that promise for granted. God could have chosen a different arrangement. He could have chosen just to watch from a distance. As a boy, I used to raise tropical fish. I've told you that before. At nights, on occasion, I turn off my ceiling light, turn off the light on my desk, and then I turn on the little lights on the fish tank. And I'd lie in bed and just watch those fish go back and forth. It was enjoyable. Really liked it. But that was about the extent of my relationship with those fish. If one of them died and floated to the surface, I'd just scoop them out and flush them away. That's how it worked. I didn't mourn the loss of those fish. Had neon tetras. I couldn't tell one from the other, nor did I care to. I just liked to watch them. Now, God could have chosen to relate to us like that. He could have decided to simply watch us from a distance like I watched my fish. But he didn't. He chose to be with us. He chose to be involved with us. It's as if God just got in the tank with us. That's significant. My mom and dad live in Pennsylvania, and routinely we'll send them cards and send some pictures and back and forth on special occasions. I'll often call them just to hear their voice, but in a week, they're coming for a visit. They're flying to Texas, and I can't wait. Cards are good, phone calls are better, but there's nothing like a visit because we will be together. We will be with each other. And in the same way, God is with us. We're not separated by miles. It's as if God said, you know, I'm going to take a plane to Texas and fly to DFW, get in a car and drive to your house, go in your house and stay put. All this means we're not left alone to face the troubles in our lives. So, what can we expect from God when we face heartache? We can expect his presence. That's the foundation of the pyramid. Now, let's build on this and talk about some of the implications of his presence in our lives. The other day, I dropped in on our next door neighbors. That's the Wilson family. That's Eric, Erica, our daughter, and our 8-year-old grandson, Eli. I just dropped in. Eli was sitting at the kitchen table. This is toward the end of the school year. He's exhausted. His dad is standing over trying to prod him to finish his assignment. He was clearly in a bad mood. And I just stood next to him and said, hey, bub. And he didn't even look at me. He just kind of kept his head down. He said, what are you doing here? I said, you rat, how rude. Your own pop-up treat me like that. So I gave him a hard time and went home. Setting his attitude aside, he was asking a fair question. What was I doing there? Did I come to return something I borrowed? Did I come to see if Eric had made a cake and I could grab a piece? Did I come to ask him to have a catch with me? It's a fair question. In a similar way, it's a fair question for us to ask of God. We know that and have just learned that he's present with us, but what's he doing there? Is he coming to bring down the hammer when we mess up? Is he coming to pounce on us? Well, we'll see in verses 1 and 2 exactly why he's there. It's crystal clear. Look with me. Verse 1. God is our refuge and strength. Here it is. An ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear. God is an ever-present what? Help in trouble. God is present in our lives to help us in our troubles. He is present in your life to help you with that heartache that you wrote on that card. That's what he's doing here. That's the next level of the pyramid. He is present to help us. That means God will provide what we need to face the challenges of life. What we lack, he will supply. What we can't do for ourselves, he will do for us. No matter what you have on your card, I can say with confidence, you have no reason to fear because God will help you. Now you may be thinking, Steve, you don't know what's on my card. You don't know the magnitude of the problems I'm facing. I'm doomed. My trouble is beyond the scope of God's help. Well, the writer of the Psalms anticipated that objection, and he counters that objection by describing the most horrific scene imaginable. He does this to show us there's no problem beyond God's ability to help. We read in verse 2 of the scene he describes, "Therefore we will not fear, though the earth give way, though the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though the waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging." He's picturing the very earth crumbling beneath us. Mountains, considered pretty stable, shake, fall apart, and roll like rubble into the sea. This is clearly a worst-case scenario. And the point is this. If God is able to help us through a scene like this, he's able to handle what's on our cards. The writer goes out of his way to assure us that God will help us no matter what we face. We have no need to fear because God is with us to help us. I read a great book called Boys in the Boat. It's a story of Joe Rance. He was a farm boy abandoned by his family, dirt poor. Through hard work and perseverance, Joe managed to put himself through the University of Washington. And against all odds, he secured for himself a position on the prestigious boat racing team. I spoke to you a while back how Joe and his 7 other crewmates powered their 70-foot racing shell to a gold medal victory in Berlin in 1936. Reflecting on that race, one commentator called them, and I quote, "the greatest 8 I ever saw, and I never expect to see another like it." They were hailed by many, and I quote, "as the finest racing crew of all time." Years later, they were inducted into the Boat Racing Hall of Fame, and their boat is on display at the University of Washington today. Al Albrechtsen, their coach and the head coach of the department for decades, at the end of his very long career, was asked to give the highlight of his vast, long career in racing. And he said this. He said, "The highlight of my career was the day I put Joe Rance in the boat and watched that boat take off." My friends, the day you came to faith, God stepped into your boat. God stepped into your boat and he took those oars in his hands and he looked you in the eyes and he said, "I am here to help you. We can do this together. We've got everything we need to face the obstacles in our lives." Back to the pyramid. God is present. God is present to help us. Now let's move a little higher and see the kind of help that God gives to us. We're going to see how it is that God actually helps us. Since becoming a grandfather, I've discovered that the word help has different meanings. I love working with my grandkids. I really do. I often schedule my projects around their schedule, and I work to include them. Having said that, sometimes their help is not really helpful. On Tuesday afternoon, I decided to replace the brake pads on my car. 8-year-old Timothy, 6-year-old Charlie asked if they could help. I said, of course you can. And I let them do everything they could possibly do. They unscrewed the lug nuts and they turned the ratchet. They honestly did the very best they could do. Do you know how long it takes a 6-year-old to jack up a car? About 50 times longer than I could do it myself. They truly helped with their whole heart. I enjoyed every moment, and I wouldn't change a thing. But honestly, I could have done that job alone in a fraction of the time. There is help, and then there is help. So what kind of help does God offer us? Is it peripheral? Is this kind of nice to have around? No. We're going to see that God's help is substantial. It is significant. Verse 1. This is one of the ways he helps. God is our refuge. God is our refuge. Up the pyramid, God is present to help as a refuge. When we need to step out of the wind and the rain, God provides a refuge. He provides a safe place to retreat, a shelter from the storm. That's significant help. He provides for us a place to heal, a place to recover from the hardships of life. How many of you have been to Niagara Falls? Okay, quite a few. I never have, but I've seen pictures and movies and things like that. I imagine it's terrifying watching that volume of water pour over that ledge and crash into the pools below. I learned that on the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, there's a place you can get to through tunnels in the rock where you can actually stand behind the falls, just feet from certain death. You can stand safe and sound, tucked into the rock. Now that's what I call a refuge, and that's what God is to us. When we can bear it no longer, when we need a break from all the storms of life, when we need relief, we can tuck ourselves back into the shelter of his arms. But we can't stay in a shelter forever, can we? A shelter's not designed for long haul. A shelter's more like a hotel than an apartment. You don't sign a long-term lease on a place of refuge. There comes a time to leave that place of refuge and step out to address the trouble. There comes a time to address the hardship and a time to walk through the challenge. And at that point, God shows up with his presence and provides strength. You see that in verse 1? God is our refuge and our strength. God provides enablement for us to put one foot in front of the other to do what we have to do. When we are weak, God will empower us to act. Now, this aspect of God's presence is near and dear to my heart. I mean that. I don't need God's help to tie my shoes. I don't need God's help to help me cook my oatmeal. But I sure do need his help in other areas of my life. I need his help to serve other people. I need his help to battle sin. I really do. I need his help to be a loving husband, a good friend. I need his help to give direction as an elder to this church family. I need his help to finish the race that God's put in front of me without doing something stupid and messing everything up. I fully admit that in many, if not most, responsibilities in my life, I am in over my head. That's a fact. My prayers consist of often simply this. I'm on my knees. Ah! I can't do this. Then I get up from my knees and I say, here we go, God. It's you and me. Two of my favorite verses. They've been with me for years. David says, with your help, I can scale a wall. With your help, I can advance against the truth. Paul from prison says, the Lord stood by me and gave me strength. I'm so thankful for that aspect of God's presence in my life, and I hope you are too. God is present to help us as a refuge, to give us strength. We're right about at the top of the pyramid. We're going to see that God is present as a source of joy and gladness. This is a bonus. This is like homemade bluebell vanilla on top of a big piece of cake. God promises to us a continuous stream of gladness and joy, even in the midst of the profound trouble we face. Not only can we retreat to his refuge, not only can we advance in his strength, the next verse we're going to read shows us that we can do it all with a measure of joy. We read in verse 4, "There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall." There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God. The context of that verse is the city of God, Jerusalem, surrounded by an enemy. The people of God are in that city or under siege, and the enemy is trying to cut off the water source, which would be a sure way to defeat them. But we read that God will not allow that water source to be cut off. There is a river. You and I take water for granted. I doubt any of you today, when you brushed your teeth or made your coffee, say, "Hey, everybody, look, there's water. There's water here." But if we lived in a walled city in a dusty climate and there's an enemy outside the walls damming up the river, we might have a different perspective on water. An uninterrupted stream of cold, clear water would make us glad. And the point is this: no matter what problems surround us, God gets through with a pool of water, refreshing water for our souls. There is a river whose streams make glad the city and the people of God. Last week, our whole family was together. Heather and Jonathan came in from Kentucky. They brought with them, of course, Cooper and JC, our grandsons and granddaughter. And they also brought with them two small children whom they are fostering, Ava and another Eli. During the visit, there were some scenes that were poignant. I would try to catch Leslie's eye and just not say a word, just like take it in. One of those moments centered around our swimming pool. It was a scene out of a Norman Rockwell painting. Seven kids were in the pool. Two of them were beating each other with those foam noodle things. I think it was Eli and Cooper just whacking each other on the head. I looked at JC. She was upside down on the slide, ready, just hanging on, ready to slide in head first. Timothy was on all fours on a big black tube, just rocking, just creating all kinds of waves, splashing the water out of the pool. Someone else is on a floaty that has a squirt gun, just annoying everybody. Charlie had goggles pressed into his face and a snorkel, just looking real goofy. Seven kids were as happy as seven kids could possibly be. Beyond the borders of our yard is a world full of pain and heartache. But for those moments, seven children played without a care in the world. You and I have a pool provided by God to bring joy in the midst of trouble. No matter what is going on all around us, we can go into that pool, swim around, be refreshed. We can be glad. That's the pinnacle of that pyramid. So let's put it all together. God is present to help us as a refuge, as a source of strength, and as a continuous supply of joy. That's what we can expect from him when everything is not hunky-dory. Do you know what that means? We don't have to bear our burdens alone. How's that for a great and precious promise? I asked Carolyn to sing a hymn. It's an old hymn. I learned it as a boy, and it has stuck with me and served me well my whole life. As she sings, I want you to hold your white card. And I want you to think about the words on that card, the heartache you face, and I want you to make a decision this morning. Will you carry that burden alone, or will you turn to God for his help?
If the world world from you withholds of its silver and its gold. And you have to get along with meager fare. Just remember in his word how he feeds the little birds. Take your burden to the Lord, leave it there. Leave it there, leave it there. Just take your burden to the Lord, oh, and leave it there. If you trust him through your doubts, he will surely bring you out. Take your burden to the Lord, leave it there. If your body suffers pain and your health you can't regain, and your soul is slowly sinking in despair, Jesus knows the pain you feel. He can save and he can heal. Take your burden to the Lord, leave it there. Leave it there, leave it there. Just take your burden to the Lord, oh, and leave it there. If you trust him through your doubts, he will surely bring you out. Take your burden to the Lord, leave it there. Take your burden to the Lord and leave it there.